Now, we don't know what's going to happen with the Triple Crown races. We don't know what's going to happen with Breeders' Cup. We don't know what's going to happen with so many events that take place in the region, the major days that each of our tracks have. And the beauty of Match was it provided a roadmap for the horsemen in the divisions that we had selected. And we just couldn't put the roadmap together. We didn't know how we were going to do it, and we didn't want to do it on the fly. I think the other problem that many may not focus on is that the revenue stream that supports daily racing is shut off right now. I'm talking about parimutuel handle. I'm talking about revenues that are allocated to the racing industry from the casino industry in our region. Most of our purses are infused to some extent by casino-related revenues. That spigot is dry right now, and even if we're able to get up and running, even if it's spectatorless racing, the revenues that come from the casino industry are going to lag far behind because they're, you know, when we go back to some sense of normalcy, the question will be, how are the casinos going to operate because they generate large crowds who are close together? Without the revenue stream, it just didn't seem to make any sense whatsoever, even if we could find a way to do the schedule.
Fair enough. Well, we'll look to 2021 for Match Series. Meanwhile, Alan, the topics that you're touching on that affect the THA member tracks, particularly the Mid-Atlantic region, and last week via teleconference, the spring get-together. I was lucky enough to attend last year. It was fascinating. As you've said so often, and as has been widely acknowledged by the whole industry, the Mid-Atlantic was out in front of things like monitoring for improved conditions toward injury and fatality, and the strategic plan that you put together being more widely adopted by the industry. Talk about last week's teleconference.
So first of all, it was a terrific success from the standpoint that we were able to have everyone participate by teleconference. And that's going to be the new way to go now for everyone. It saves the travel time. It saves the other expense. Everyone was able to do it. Everyone was able to participate. And it was a very effective way of doing business. So we are, as we've said many times, we are laser focused on our strategic plan, the execution of that plan. The hiring of Andy Belfiore was just a godsend for us. She has worked this thing 24/7 with the organization of regional committees, the development of at least six or seven best practices for the region that are being implemented. And we did our yearly analysis of medication and drug testing in the region. Scott Palmer did a terrific analysis of the fatality rate in the region in 2019. Where we've seen successes, where we know there's more work to be done. And then we looked at a number of specific issues that need to be focused on to get the fatality rate down and to make the environment safer for our horses. We've got several directives that will be issued to the region. And we talked about a uniform crop rule. I think that the regulators in the region unanimously concluded, and the stakeholders, that we need to have one crop rule for the region, since everyone's talking about a new crop rule. Right now, we've got probably six or seven varying versions, and it's hard for the riders, it's hard for the trainers, it's hard for the industry to understand. So we're going to try to have a uniform crop rule. And the lull in racing right now gives us the opportunity to really focus on a number of things that we hope that we can implement in the interim and have ready to go when we resume live racing, and it just puts us in a better place.
How much of the strategic plan, and you talk about the lull here, and you and I last month, essentially, as it was becoming evident that we were going to have an abbreviated wagering menu in terms of jurisdictions operating. And we talked about the alternative bill and some of those elements, and haven't heard too many updates in recent weeks at all about how that is proceeding, as well as the Thoroughbred Safety Coalition and, you know, what other activities related to the Mid-Atlantic strategic plan and how implementation is going on that front. Things have been very quiet.
Well, they may seem quiet. There is a lot of discussion among industry leadership that is taking place right now. I think that, you know, separate and apart from the debates that we've been having that's led up to this point, I think that the COVID situation really is a game changer for everyone. This industry is severely challenged right now. It's severely challenged on a number of fronts, but the economic model being challenged the way it is, our ability to keep owners in the business in these economic times, putting aside the industry debates over medication and other issues. I think there is a sense of urgency within the industry that we need to make as many fixes as we can in every area. And I think that there is a spirit of maybe compromise is an unfair word. I think there's a spirit that we need to get a consensus. And I think that I'm actually optimistic that we're going to get there on every one of the issues that has been dividing us. There is universal commitment in this industry to the safety and welfare reforms that are being implemented. I'd like to think that the Mid-Atlantic is the model. If there's a better mousetrap or there are better ways to do things, then we ought to be doing them. And working with the Thoroughbred Safety Coalition and working with the various industry groups that are quietly working on developing national standards, it's a very positive development. And everyone at the table agrees with that. I don't think we're actually that far apart on medication. I think there is a universal understanding. And, you know, I think some of my remarks the last time I was on your show had been misrepresented or otherwise. We need to focus on better drug testing, but drug testing isn't the only way that we root out corruption in our business. And one of our greatest weaknesses is our investigative arm and our enforcement capabilities. And I think that there is 100% agreement that we need to fix that, and we need to do that better. With respect to uniform medication, we enacted two very significant medication changes at the end of 2019 dealing with nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs and corticosteroids. We have moved those changes in the Mid-Atlantic region already, and they will be in place in the region when we resume live racing. And that's been done by any standard at what I guess we would consider warp speed, but it's been done quickly. And that's the kind of commitment that is there. West Virginia is a year behind us because they have to go to their legislature, but the other jurisdictions in the region have implemented or will have implemented those changes when we resume live racing. And that's the spirit that is, I think, it's certainly in place in the Mid-Atlantic. And I'd like to think that it's happening elsewhere. Another positive development I saw was that California is moving forward with the multiple medication violation system, which has been a critical part and component of the Mid-Atlantic medication program and has been very successful. And I'm glad to see California's doing it, because I think that will then encourage the remaining jurisdictions to do it. So, I mean, there are things happening. We all understand the situation. We all understand where we need to make changes. And I believe that the right people are involved in the discussions. And I believe that we will get there.
Alan, the most recent next steps falling out from the indictments weeks ago were arraignments and pleas that were entered. I saw some of the things that have been written. What's your take? And certainly under these present national conditions, it's getting next to no. People aren't. Not that they're not concerned, but it's certainly not a priority on people's radar screens. But I did see where Ray Pawlak wrote that the entire industry is going to be put on trial, which I thought was hyperbolic and super sensationalized. What's your take on the next steps on that front?
I don't necessarily disagree with everything that Ray Pawlak said. I think that he pointed out weaknesses and instances in our system that are fair game. There are holes in our regulatory system. There are weaknesses in our regulatory system, whether it's New Mexico, whether it's Florida, whether it's whatever. I come back to the same notion here that whether it was under a system with USADA or whatever we're doing, the current investigation started with local regulators who were cooperating with state law enforcement, cooperating with investigative services that were provided by groups in our industry. That was very helpful. And ultimately, there was a need for federal intervention. The federal government takes the position that because racing is a state-regulated, state-sanctioned sport, that the states are the enforcement arm for the industry. And so they typically look to the industry and say, well, you deal with these people. What do you do with them? It's kind of like what you did with Lance Armstrong. You throw them out of the sport, you penalize them, and you disincentivize people from that kind of conduct going forward. Now, if they're, and these investigations take time. If through a federal bill or otherwise, and I come back to the Horse Racing Integrity Act, would not necessarily have prevented this, nor would the investigation have been any different. If there is a role for USADA to play, and I'd like to think there is, in helping us develop a far better investigative arm, one that we really, quite frankly, don't have, and an enforcement capability, I'm all in on that. And I think we're all in on that. I don't think USADA is in the rulemaking business, and I don't think that we want USADA to make the rules. And I think USADA would take the position that, hey, industry, you make the rules, we'll help you enforce them. So, we're not that, there isn't that big a disagreement. Most of it is with process. I guess I'm one of the industry leaders that Ray criticizes as, we have failed the business. I don't think that's fair. You're going to have corrupt situations. They occur. They occur in any sport. If they become deterrents in and of themselves. But it does provide an opportunity for us, and that's what we're doing right now, is looking at the weaknesses in our regulatory system, and I think there's a sense of urgency to address them. And that's, I think, the process that's going on right now.
Alan Forman with us. We've got a couple of minutes to close out. Alan, let's turn back to Park Heights, Anne Arundel County, and Annapolis, and Governor Hogan, who has been at nothing short of brilliant in handling Maryland's corona response and has really, I think, garnered appropriate national attention and appreciation. Somewhere on the corner of his desk is the redevelopment plan. Any news on when he'll sign it?
So the General Assembly presented legislation for the governor to sign, veto, or allow to become law this past Tuesday. And the governor has 30 days to sign the bills, to veto the bills, or to do neither, and they become law. The effective date for our legislation is June 1. I can't think of a better piece of legislation going forward under the current circumstances than our redevelopment plan, because it will provide significant employment, construction employment, and related infrastructure employment. The development opportunities become real opportunities. And so I think it's a win-win. The Federal Reserve Board, the Treasury, is taking steps that I think are going to make the bonds very attractive, but that's going to be the work of Maryland Stadium Authority. The redevelopment plan is a long-term plan. We wouldn't even be going under construction for at least a year. And so we've got that opportunity between now and then to get ready, and hopefully we will have this COVID situation under control, and hopefully by then maybe a vaccine or otherwise. I think the greater concern is how long this current situation lasts and what we look like when we come out of it. So there are a lot of unknowns, but all in all, I think this is an extraordinarily positive step for the governor to take and for us to move forward in Maryland.
Well, certainly, we've applauded and reported on the progress every step of the way, and it's not even at the goal line. It's in the clubhouse already, and just a question of the final strokes that will initiate will be a long-term, stable future for Maryland. And, Maryland deserves it, and the participants have, when people you've been talking to, Alan, how's everybody holding up?
We're doing the best we can under the circumstances. The good news, I'm going to knock on wood saying this, is that the protocols that we have implemented through MedStar, Dr. Kelly Ryan, and others, Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, Maryland Jockey Club at Laurel, have been significant. And we've got a safe environment. We're training. Everyone's chomping at the bit, looking forward to when we return to live racing. But everyone's safety is paramount, and we'd like to think that we can assure the governor, as he considers relaxing some of the restrictions, that we can get back to live racing because of the safety protocols that we've implemented that have been very successful. So that's our goal right now, and our goal is to work with every one of our horsemen who need help to do everything we can to lead them in the right direction.
Alan Foreman, everybody, THARacing.com, and you follow THA Racing on Twitter as well. And Alan, thank you as always.
Thanks,
Passover.
Steve.
Good Pesach to you and the family.
And best to everyone, and please everyone stay healthy and safe. Thank you.
Alan Foreman, there you go. And Thursday, racing, 1 o'clock Eastern, Gulfstream. Nine race card or 10 race card? 10 race card today with a first level allowance feature going as the ninth. And Moretti in there today for Todd Pletcher. And at Oaklawn, the racing starts at 2:05 Eastern. And there's a nice allowance there as well. 6 furlong, 3 and ups money allowance with Asmussen Town Champ trying to break this. He's got a few more. I think he's got at least two today. As Steve, yeah, he's got Kalud in the first race trying to break that winless scheme. Weekend preview at the races tomorrow, particularly the big Oaklawn card, but also Tampa and Gulfstream. Want to thank everybody that came through today. Dick Powell, Andrew Hawkins will recap his ideas for tomorrow night at Randwick. Tony Black, terrific today as always. Steve Haskin and Alan Foreman just now. We'll try to get Rich Eng in tomorrow for some handicapping. All right? Stay safe. Stay sane. and enjoy second night of Passover. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. 6 to 9 replay, live at 9. Thanks, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving environment.